Welcome once again to our program, The Universal Call to Holiness and Wholeness, as given to us by Vatican Council II and repeated over and over in the wonderful talks that Pope John Paul II gave as he traveled as the pilgrim of the world to east, west, and north, south compass points of our world today. And we've been talking about how do we try to deal with the oppositions or the obstacles or the fences that block our way on the climb of the road to holiness. And we've been talking particularly about the opponents of wholeness or holiness as evidenced by Scripture, the world, the flesh, and the devil. And we talked about world or worldliness, and we're talking now about the flesh. World is how things outside of us pull at us. Internet, pornography, pleasure, this world only. Only live for today. We only go around once. And so there are many temptations in the world around us, but there are temptations that come from inside of us. We're going to talk about those temptations from inside of us with my guest, Ron Eldred, who once again is our guest on the program. He's the teacher of world history and religion at John Paul II Catholic High, and I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus here at St. Patrick Catholic Church at 19th and Poplar in Terre Haute. So Ron, welcome once again, and we might take up where we left off last time about saying that the flesh or the inner compulsions, the inner weakness that we all experience from original sin play a mighty big part in fighting our desire to try to be whole and wholesome people. What would you have to say about suffering in the fight against the flesh?
Well, you mentioned a while ago, let me preface that with a couple of comments, that the flesh involves, you know, temptations against the flesh, and rather than just that which is outside us, of course, in the world. And that internal temptation, of course, is due to our fallen human nature. That is original sin, due to original sin. And what led to the conversation to where we're at right now is that we had been quoting Father and discussing Father Jordan Allman quite a bit, who is one of the world's most prominent spiritual directors and theologians, spiritual theologians. And he was saying that the two most important things that contribute to the difficulties that we have with the flesh is an inordinate desire for pleasure, which we just finished discussing that in the last half-hour session that we had. And now we're ready to begin looking at excessive fear of suffering people have living in a society. And that's kind of the other side of the coin. In other words, if you have an inordinate desire for pleasure, then obviously there's going to be an inordinate desire, that is an excessive fear of suffering. And, of course, suffering is going to come our way no matter what. And so the Catholic position has always been is that how can we take this suffering, which is going to come our way anyway, which is one of the results of, you know, sin, original sin, and how can we make it, turn it into something that's positive? How can we make it, in other words, redemptive?
Healing so, for ourselves and others, as Jesus' suffering was redemptive for the world.
Yes. So that's what's leading up to the question here. And going back to your question, what role does suffering play in our fight against the flesh? And, well, as Father Allman told us, and I just suggested, that the flesh wages war against us and is an instinctive fear of suffering, which, according to Father Allman, is an obstacle to our sanctification, that is, our becoming holy, that is, becoming like Jesus. And he's saying we run from pain because we love pleasure too much, so much. St. Teresa of Avila tells us that those who are to reach the heights of sanctity must learn to dominate their fear of suffering, or eliminate their fear of suffering.
Okay.
St. John of the Cross gives special emphasis to the love of suffering. And we want to be careful about when you say the word, you know, the love of suffering. We don't mean that in the sense is that these were people who went out looking for suffering, but they knew it was going to come their way. And so when it came their way, they simply embraced it and united their suffering with the suffering of Christ, and which, of course, made their suffering redemptive, as Christ's suffering was redemptive.
So it's natural to be pulled toward pleasure, and it's natural to avoid suffering.
Certainly.
And we don't want to let those either one of them dominate us, and that we can see good even in struggle or suffering.
Well, the whole playing thing is, when you make suffering redemptive, what you're really doing is using your suffering to help pay for the damage caused by your own sins or the sins of others, and to help you achieve closer union with God. In other words, the more holy we become, the more virtuous we become, the more godlike we become, and the more our image becomes like the image that that God had created us in His own image. And an outstanding of one embracing suffering was Saint Teresa of Lisieux, or Thérèse of Lisieux, whom I've read several places that when she spilled out blood for the first time from consumption, or what we know as tuberculosis today, she rejoiced because she could now begin to suffer for her salvation and the salvation of others.
She had this great desire to win souls to God and to Jesus by offering up her sufferings, whatever they might be.
And she must have only been about 21 at that time, because she died when she was 24. And there was at least a 2 or 3 year period when she went through a period of extreme suffering, of course, from, as I said, what they called consumption back in those days, which is, we know today, of course, is tuberculosis. Tuberculosis was a terrible disease. It wasn't something that only attacked the lungs. It would it eventually would spread in through the good part of the body and would cause terrible sores. Saint Bernadette, for example, when she had tuberculosis and died of it, of course, eventually she had terrible sores that had entered into her legs in different places and come, I guess, from the bone or from something like that, and worked their way outwards.
So it's really a disease that causes real suffering, but the saints were able to connect that with the suffering of Jesus on the cross.
I have a granddaughter. It reminds me of a little story. I have a granddaughter. She's about 9 years old now, 8 or 9 years old. And she read the life of Saint Thérèse of Lisieux. That's one of their favorite saints in their family. And one day she was telling somebody in our family that she says, "Well, I don't want to be perfect, because if I'm perfect, then that means that you know, I might have to spit up blood." She got the idea from reading, you know, the story of Saint Thérèse, you know, who was about as perfect as a human being could be. But to get that perfect, she had to suffer a lot.
I see.
So she picked that up when she read.
I see.
When she read the novel or the autobiography of Saint Thérèse. Now this doesn't mean, though, that we should like suffering. That would really be, you know, masochistic. But to embrace whatever suffering comes our way in life and unite it to Christ's suffering gives our suffering redemptive value.
And that's where we get that old Catholic saying, well, offer it up.
Yes. Well, St. Teresa of Avila has said, to achieve perfection, one must first become detached from the things of the world. And Father Ammann tells us that there is nothing that more readily detaches us from created things than the pains of suffering. And this is true because the suffering person is more likely to raise his or her eyes to heaven, to long for his or her heavenly home, than someone, you know, who's always happy and always, you know, feeling pleasure.
There's a little poem that runs, "I walked a mile with pleasure, she chattered all the way, but none the things I learned from her, from all she had to say. I walked a mile with sorrow, ne'er a word said she, but all the things I learned from her when sorrow walked with me." So we don't like sorrow for a companion, as you're saying, but we certainly can grow and learn wonderful things spiritually about how we can be sympathetic and deal with others more empathy, and of course try to unite ourselves with Jesus. We live in a vale of tears. We often call in this valley of tears, and sufferings and sorrows are going to come our way. We can't avoid them. So what about how can we not waste our tears, our crosses, our fears, our doubts, our headaches, our backaches, our heartaches, and our soul aches? Because it's easy to waste it.
The big thing is not to waste it on bitterness or despair or something of that sort. I think in your sermons, I recall several of your sermons over the years, you would say something to the effect that suffering can either make you bitter or better. And unfortunately, it does tend to make people bitter more than better. That is, holier or more virtuous people. But at least since the fall of man, our human lot has been one of suffering, sorrow, death, and destruction. Therefore, we might as well resign ourselves to dealing with these evils in life. And the way we deal with them will determine not only our degree of happiness in this life, but in the next life as well. There's no other way to heaven, for as Jesus himself said, quote, "If anyone wants to be a follower of mine, let him renounce himself and take up his cross and follow me." We find this in Matthew 16:24. According to Father Allman, quote, "There's no other way," talking about the cross now, "it is necessary to embrace suffering, to take up one's cross, and to follow Christ to the height of Calvary. Not to see there how they crucified him, but to be crucified at his side. There is no sanctification without crucifixion with Christ," end of quote. He said that those who weep and mourn are blessed because they shall be comforted. This is, of course, Christ in the Sermon on the Mount, one of the Beatitudes that we talked about earlier in our series.
Always tell the servers, one carries the two candles, one carries the cross, one carries the book. And I always call the one who carries the cross Simon of Cyrene, that you're helping Jesus today carry his cross. So be courageous and don't falter. But in a way, that's what we're asked to do. Help Jesus carry his cross like Simon of Cyrene did. And it's amazing how many ordinary people have integrated that into their daily life. Jesus, you died for me. Help me live for you. A little prayer that tries to help us see our pains and sufferings as crosses that make us bitter rather than make us hopefully better than bitter. And of course, they can petrify our heart or they can purify our heart. And we all know that old saying about sufferings can make us or break us spiritually and even emotionally and mentally. Our attitude, we can become real complaining, or like so many people that I've seen in life who had a lot of crosses to bear. Sometimes they were as cheerful, if not more cheerful, than people who didn't have those physical or emotional crosses to carry. Well, what about suffering, which is a mystery? I think we all agree to that, but doesn't it help restore the imbalance caused by sin?
Yes. Father Allman, he explains that actual sins upsets the balance of divine justice that was first upset by Adam and Eve's original sin and reestablished by Christ's redemption, that is, his suffering and death on the cross, which paid for all the damage caused by actual and original sin. And this is true because actual, and I'll quote for Father Allman here, from Father Allman, quote, "Actual or personal sin places the weight of pleasure on the scale of justice. For every sin carries with it some pleasure or satisfaction. It is therefore necessary that the equilibrium of divine justice be reestablished by the weight of sorrow placed on the other side, end of quote. I'm quoting from his very famous book, Spiritual Theology. The offense against God and the damage caused by our sins must be paid for by some form of suffering, either in this life or in the next life. This is nothing more than a religious application of the old idea of the scales of justice.
And when, as you quoted earlier, Jesus said, you really can't be my follower if you don't take up your cross, because each of us will have a cross in some way, splinters from the cross, or a stick from the crown of thorns, or a few drops of bloody sweat that will unite us to Jesus.
Well, you know, justice is giving something, someone something that that's owed to them, and something that they have coming. And so injustice, obviously, is giving someone something that they don't have coming. And so this creates a whole imbalance that has to be balanced out, of course, in the scales of justice.
Like if I steal your car, I can't really, even though I say I'm sorry to you, unless I gave your car back, I haven't restored the balance of justice and helped straighten out any inconveniences I caused by me taking your car and you couldn't get to work. So isn't that sort of balancing the scale of justice? Okay, well, does Father Allman have any other suggestions about coping with the sufferings each of us is going to have, mental, emotional, spiritual, or physical, one day or another in our lives?
Yes, he has several points as, of good advice we'll share with our listeners here. Number one, acceptance of duties. He tells us never omit any of our duties because of the suffering or the difficulty that it might cause us. In this regard, Father Allman says that if one neglects a serious obligation without any reason other than the inconvenience or slight difficulty involved in performing it, he or she commits, he says, a serious sin. That is, that they know that it's an important duty to do and they don't do it. Moreover, even if the obligation is light, it is necessary for one to perform his or her duties in spite of a natural dislike for them. As long as it's a duty, we're obligated to do it.
Okay, I'm trying to think of an example, and maybe you can think of one too, Ron, where my mind neglecting a serious obligation, I would commit a big sin. And the one thought that comes to mind is, well, if I'm even on a worldly view, if I'm a soldier on duty and I go to sleep in trying to protect the whole barracks and the barracks is attacked and I didn't give the warning, then I really committed a serious crime enough to be court-martialed. Can you think of any other example where neglecting a duty?
One that comes to mind, the teachers, parents, anyone in authority are obligated to see that other people, you know, abide by the rules. And okay. Sometimes when you have to get on people, that causes unpleasantness, that causes discomfort, it causes a certain amount of suffering. And if a person fails to do that, then they are committing a sin because they're not doing what they're obligated to do by the office that they hold.
Okay, I may have a serious obligation to arrest somebody who's driving drunk, and I let them go because of their great influence or the like, while I'm really neglecting and endangering other people. So devotion to duty is one of the hardest things most of us have to deal with. We've got some hard things to do.
And Father just says if we need to accept them. Another thing he says we need to do, we need to be resigned to crosses. The crosses that God sends us directly or allows to happen to us have a great value for sanctification if we accept them with love and resignation. And God uses crosses as instruments for our sanctification, that is, to make us holy, to stimulate us to be holy.
Often through crosses we get seasoned in virtue. It was Teresa of Avila who said, let no one say they have acquired a real virtue or a habit of acting right if they have not been tempted to the opposite vice, if they haven't had to struggle and resist. So it's like the trees on the mountain, they get deep roots when they have to fight the wind. So in our struggling, we become deeply rooted spiritual people too. Okay, what about voluntary mortifications? Isn't this a little maybe masochistic?
Well, the person who takes the initiative to voluntarily practice Christian mortification in its various forms advances in the love of suffering in spite of the repugnance he or she may feel, you know, toward that discomfort or that what you're depriving yourself or something of that sort. We're talking about, you know, doing penances. We're talking about...
well, like during Lent.
Fasting, you know, or
giving
staying.
Up food or meat or... practicing self-discipline, trying to mortify our will and our passions so we say no to good things so we can say no to bad things.
Yeah, it helps us develop self-discipline, as you just mentioned a while ago.
Of course, and one of the things that everyone would know about is that mothers have to accept mortification, suffering, and pain in childbirth. But they see the good, and they're willing to go through it for the love of another person. And many times, parents have to sacrifice themselves for the good of their other for the good of their children. That's almost the popular theme of literature, where parents sacrifice themselves for the good of their children. What about this preferring suffering to pleasure? Now, that gets a little easy to misunderstand.
Yeah, this is a difficult one. The great saints, though, they reached height of sanctity whereby they felt an instinctive horror. I'm quoting now from Father Allman here, Jordan Allman, quote, instinctive horror for anything that would satisfy their taste and comfort. When everything went badly with them and the whole world persecuted and calumniated them, they rejoiced and gave thanks to God. If others applauded or praised them, they trembled as if God had permitted those things as punishment for their sins. They hardly took any account of themselves at all, or of the heroism that such an attitude presupposes. They were so familiar with suffering that it seemed to them the most natural thing in the world to endure pain. End of quote. As I never tire of saying to my students, I've said this, I think, several times in this series, too, various times. When the world praises us, it's time to closely examine our lives because we're probably doing something wrong. As you said at the beginning, we have to be careful about this when preferring suffering to pleasure because that can seem to be masochistic, but that's not the point. I think what, I don't think saints went around looking for pain in the sense, suffering in the sense that somehow the twisted idea that you derive pleasure from pain, that's the masochistic idea.
Right.
And that really twists it. I think pain is going to come your way, suffering is going to come your way, and the whole idea, of course, of the church and what the church has taught for 2,000 years is take this suffering and embrace it, accept it, united with Christ's suffering on the cross, and make it redemptive, as his suffering on the cross was.
And I think St. Paul would be a great example. I was scourged, I was wrecked in shipwreck, I was stoned to death, and he wasn't happy about those things, but he said, I did them in order to get the job done. I was willing to put up with anything in order to preach Christ crucified across the Mediterranean world. So it wasn't he was loving the sufferings, but that he was willing to put up with anything. He wasn't going to be deterred, no matter what obstacles or pain that he ran into. And what he said, for me to live is Christ. And so he was a person, I think, who was well known from the scriptures about willing to face the foe and bear the burden and bear the cross because he had a mission to accomplish.
Father Allman offers us one more suggestion, and this is offering oneself as a victim. And he tells us that the highest state of love of suffering is the example of victim souls. As I said earlier, Teresa of Lisieux rejoiced the first time she spit up blood, for now she could begin to suffer for the benefit of others. Victim souls offer up their suffering not only for their own sins, but for the conversion of sinners, for the poor souls in purgatory, the benefit of the church, vocations to the priesthood and the religious life, expiation for the sins of the world, the needs of the poorest of the poor, and for other lofty purposes. But Father Allman warns us that, quote, it would be a terrible presumption for a beginner or an imperfectly purified soul to place itself in this state, end of quote. That is, as a state of a victim soul. He says that, quote, the soul that would give itself in this way for the salvation of others must itself be intimately united with God and must have traveled a long way toward its own perfection in charity. It must be a soul well schooled in suffering and even have a thirst for suffering. And then he goes on to tell us that God selects victim souls for this work. Therefore, we should not attempt to offer ourselves as victim souls until we have reached a very high state of sanctification. And then only with the consent of our confessor or a spiritual advisor. I think it would be rather presumptuous to do so. In addition to St. Teresa, some of the history's great victim souls are St. Catherine of Siena, St. Gemma Galgani, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Elizabeth of the Trinity, St. Teresa of Lisieux, we've mentioned several times, St. Padre Pio, one of the great ones of the 20th century. Nevertheless, I think, even though most of us probably are not holy enough to offer ourselves as a victim soul, we should not keep, this shouldn't keep us from praying for people in need and to applying sacrifices to their causes until we reach the level of a victim soul.
I like especially the way you stress there, Ron. We've got to stay in contact with a spiritual director, a counselor, or a spiritual guide, because we can easily get off into byways, off the beaten trail, and really get into the bushes and the thorns, not really knowing what we're doing. So I think a spiritual guide as well as is needed as well as a physical doctor. Most of us don't try to cure all our own ills without advice from a good, competent physician, and I don't think we should either without advice from a good, competent, spiritually dedicated and educated person. Well, I think our time is coming to a close, and we're going to close out. May God bless our listeners always and in always, and we hope to be with you again next time.